Hello. Now let's talk about cyclotrons. Let me just share my screen. Okay. So, cyclotrons. The family of cyclotrons can be divided into two groups. Classical cyclotron, synchrocyclotron, and isochronous cyclotron. This classification stems mainly from the energy that we can get from these different kind of cyclotrons. The maximum energy of the classical cyclotron is the lowest. There is a certain limitation, we will come to that a bit later. And it can be circumvented in two ways. One way is done by a synchrocyclotron and the other by isochronous cyclotron. What is the principle of these two other types? We will see a bit later. In the photo down here, you can see the very first cyclotron, the 4-inch cyclotron invented by Ernest Lorentz. It's a very small cyclotron, so 4-inch to about 10 centimeters diameter. And you can see here letter D shaped electrodes and a gap between them. So this is the actuating gap. And the particles are going around, and when they cross the gap, then they will gain energy. Lorentz invented many more cyclotrons, bigger and bigger, but this was the very very first one. And he got the Nobel Prize of his invention in 1939. This is a modern commercial cyclotron. Its name is Petrace, and it's used to produce radioisotopes for medical purposes. The maximum energy for protons of this cyclotron is 17 MeV, and that is very suitable for producing fluorine 18. And this fluorine 18 is in a compound FDG, which is the bulk product in PET cameras, positron emission cameras. So fluorine 18 is a positron emitter. most of the cyclotrons sold today, they go to medical purposes in hospitals or in some factories which make radioisotopes. Also, some cyclotrons are made for radiation therapy. These cyclotrons are much bigger because the energy must be much bigger. So here the maximum energy for protons is around 17 MeV, and in order to do radiation therapy with protons, you need something like 230-250 MeV protons. This cyclotron here is a science-based, science-oriented cyclotron, much bigger. If you look carefully down here, you can see one person and maybe another here. And its structure is totally different from the Lorentz cyclotron. This consists of 8 separate bending magnets, dipole magnets, and there's space between the dipoles, so there's space for other equipment. And here you can see radio frequency cavities, which create fast oscillating very, very high electric fields, which then in turn accelerate the particles. These dipole magnets bend the particles to an orbit, spiral orbit. This cyclotron is the most powerful cyclotron in the world what comes to the beam power. The maximum power of the proton beam accelerated with this cyclotron is 1.4 megawatts. It's really a huge power. If the beam hits some metal, it will drill a hole in a second. So you must be very careful with the particle being treated with this big cyclotron. This is located in Switzerland, in Villingen at PSI. Another very big cyclotron accelerating negative hydrogen, H minus. It's open here for maintenance, and you can see a person here doing the maintenance. Another photograph of this very big cyclotron. This is located in Canada, in Vancouver at Triumph Laboratory. And you can see a person sitting and standing here. And these spiral sectors are the dipoles, parts of the dipole magnets. And the diameter of this cyclotron is 18 meters. It's the biggest cyclotron in the world, what comes to the diameter. Okay, now let's go to the basic principles of the cyclotron, how it works. We start with the constant or almost constant magnetic field. And we have a charged particle with charge Q and mass M moving in a magnetic field B, so that the velocity is perpendicular to the magnetic field. Then the force is just Q times the velocity times the magnetic field. And then there's nothing else because there's 90 degrees between these vectors. And the particle then will follow a circular orbit, and there's a centripetal force pointing towards the center of the circle, and that is the magnetic force. So from geometry, the centripetal force, no matter what causes the force, is mv squared divided by bending radius r. And in this case, the force is simply qvb, the magnetic force. From this, we can derive two very important parameters. We just first take magnetic field times the bending radius r, or we usually, instead of r, we have rho, b rho. And what we have left here is just momentum m times v divided by q. On the left-hand side, we have the properties of the magnet, the magnetic field and the bending radius. And on the right-hand side, we have the properties of the particle, its momentum and the charge. So we are talking about B rho value of the beam and B rho value of the magnet, they are equal. You should remember this is very, very important. You can see that the magnetic field scales as momentum if we want to have fixed bending radius, like in bending magnets. Or in a cyclotron, we have a rather constant magnetic field, and then the radius is increased linearly with momentum. Another important parameter or factor here can be derived velocity divided by the radius. It's simply the angular frequency omega, how many radians per second the particles travel in the magnetic field on the circle. And that is just charge Q times the magnetic field B divided by mass. And as you can see, you don't see energy in this explicitly. Of course, it's embedded in the mass. So if the energy is high, so we are reaching the relativistic regime, then the mass starts to increase. But at very low energies, mass can be regarded as constant, and this is constant. And that's the basic principle of the cyclotron. This frequency here is called the cyclotron frequency, denoted by omega c. So it tells how many radians per second the particles travel If you divide that by 2 pi, then we get how many turns per second. Then we are talking about hertz in terms of voltage, RF ready frequency voltage, F. Okay. Before going further, let's look at the bending limit for the non-relativistic particle. Kinetic energy is just 1/2 mv squared or momentum squared divided by 2m. And this p we can get, let's go back, we can get from here in a bending field. So it p is b rho q. So p squared is b rho q squared divided by 2m. And this charge of the particle in coulombs is the charge state of the ion, capital Q times elementary charge E. So we can take this charge state out, and mass is roughly atomic mass unit U times the atomic number, mass number A. So this part here is just constant. The magnetic field, maximum magnetic field of the cyclotron and the maximum radius, extraction radius, rho, and then constant elementary charge divided by a constant 2 times atomic mass unit. And in front of it, we have the properties of the particle charge state squared divided by mass number. And this constant is written as KB, kinetic energy limited by bending. So we are talking about K value of the cyclotron. Take an example. If the bending radius, extraction radius, so maximum bending radius, which is the extraction radius, 1 meter, and the corresponding magnetic field 1.7 Tesla, it results into 139 megaelectron volts. So for a proton, which has charge state 1, mass number 1, it would mean that the maximum bending limit would be 139 megaelectron volts. Whether the cyclotron can really accelerate the particles to this, this energy is another matter. We will see later, or actually quite soon, that we have another limitation, namely focusing. And there is a focusing limit as well. But how these focusing limit and bending limits, how they are related, we will see later in more detail. Now back to the cyclotron frequency, omega c. The oscillating radio frequency can be the same as the omega c, so that they are in resonance. but it can be also a multiple. There's an integer here, 1, 2, 3, 4, and so forth. Some integers work, some don't, depending on the geometry. Let's take first the very, very, very first geometry by Lorentz, the letter D shaped electrodes. So there are two plates here above each other. Now we are seeing from the top. And the particles travel between the plates, and here is a gap where there is an electric field depending on the voltages here. Okay, let's start from the beginning of the red line. We have a positive particle, we should accelerate it, so it means that D2 must be positive, D1 negative, so the electric field is pointing to the right. And we have harmonic number, this here, 1. So when the particle travels an angle in space, then the RF advances with the same angle. Okay, now the particle has been accelerated, and then here it travels 180 degrees. And during that 180 degrees, the polarity of this change, and then this has become, D1 has become positive and D2 negative, and we have acceleration. And then again, 180 degrees in space, for the particle and 180 degrees in other phase, again the polarity is changed. And then we have again acceleration, turn after turn, gap after gap. So here two accelerations per turn. Here's another example of possible geometries. Now these red electrodes are the electrodes that have the oscillating voltage with the same frequency, but the phase can be different or the same. And these electrodes here are grounded, so-called dummy Ds. So they are still called Ds, although they don't look at look like letter D, small or capital, whatever. Okay, let's start from here, D1, and we are going counterclockwise. So D1 must be positive, and this is zero, so we have electric field pointing to the right, electric downhill, particles are accelerated, and the particles travel here between the dummy D electrodes 90 degrees, and the RF advances by 90 degrees. Then at the time when this particle reaches this gap here, this must be negative. And the particles are accelerated, it's negative now, and when the particles travel 90 degrees, this must change sign. In practice, it's so that when the particle passes the center line here, then this T2 changes polarity. We will come to those things later in more detail. And then we have acceleration here. And again, when the particle reaches this gap, then D1 must be negative. And then positive when the particle reaches this gap here. Depending on the harmonic mode, the phase between the phase of the two Ds can be the same, or they can be opposite. So there's a phase difference of 180 degrees or pi. So we will come to this later in the course. So this I already told, that the polarity of the electrode changes when the particle is inside the D. So this, which means that there is an acceleration in the next gap. This is comparable to the Wiedere structure. Rolf Wiedere, the Norwegian engineer who invented this linear accelerator structure, which I described earlier in the course. Let's take two examples, numerical examples. If the magnetic field is 2 Tesla maximum, then for protons, the RF frequency is the maximum is 30.5 megahertz. So we get a rough idea what kind of frequencies we are talking about. So tens of megahertz, typically. Of course, if the magnetic field is much higher, then this is higher. But 2 Tesla is practically maximum for a normal conducting cyclotron, where the iron is not saturated or close to saturation. The iron saturates at 2.14 Tesla. Another example, actually what we already had before, but there's reason for this example. So if you have magnetic field 1.5 Tesla, radius 43 centimeters, then put in the numbers, we get 20 MeV for these protons. But this is not possible in classical cyclotrons. At 20 MeV, the mass of the particle has increased somewhat. Let's go back a bit and look at this equation here. Now when the mass starts to increase and we have a constant frequency for the RF, which must be equal to the very slow particles, because we are starting practically at zero energy or close to zero energy. Then when the energy has increased and the mass starts to increase, then the revolution frequency of the particle goes down. So it's lagging the RF frequency, lagging behind the RF frequency. It comes later to the next gap and to the next gap and to the next gap, which means that at some point when the particles, they are coming always later and later, then the phase of the RF, the voltage, is such that there's no acceleration or there's deceleration, so the electric field is pointing to the wrong direction. And the rule of thumb is that the maximum mass increase, which means that the maximum kinetic energy divided by the rest mass energy, is around 1%. So for protons, where the rest mass energy is around 1 GeV, 938 point something MeV, then rule of thumb is that the maximum kinetic energy that we can get in classical cyclotrons is around 10 MeV. Here's another thing that relates to the same thing. And also is this overall very, very interesting and important, namely focusing. Here we are just looking at axial focusing. These green ones here are the poles of the magnet, and center of the cyclotron is somewhere here, and the radius goes to the right. And now here, when the particle is moving away from us, the magnet field then should point downwards. Here we have the force, V equals B, gives the direction. Then if the particle is traveling on the median plane, then the force is pointing to the left, towards the center. And now here, the magnetic field is such that it's curved like this, which means that the magnetic field is decreasing with radius. Magnetic field is flux density, and when the flux density decreases, the distance between the field lines increases. And now, in this case, when the particle is above the median plane, you can see the tail of the particle here, this cross, it's moving away from us, and using this V cross B, we see that the force is pointing left and down. So the left component keeps the particle in the circular orbit, and this vertical component is pulling it back towards the median plane. And if the particle is below the median plane, then we have the force pointing left and up. So again, towards the median plane. So there's a focusing force. If the magnetic field is increasing with radius, then the field lines would be curving to the left. And then the force for this particle would be a bit upwards. So it's defocusing. Doesn't work. We would lose the beam, because physically it's not possible that all the particles are following the same trajectory to the same direction and at the same point here. That's not possible. And what if we have just simply a fully homogeneous magnetic field? Then the magnetic field lines would be just straight lines downwards. We have the force always towards the center. And if you have a particle above the median plane, there is no restoring force. Okay, if the particle is not moving upwards, it will remain here. But there are particles that are moving upwards or downwards here. And this downwards component, it's and to the same direction as the magnetic field, and V cross B is zero. So that there is no other force. And we would lose all the particles that have any velocity towards plus or minus Z. And most of the particles are. So we would lose the whole beam. So the magnetic field must look like this. And this gives another ingredient into this here. So magnetic field must decrease with radius, which again, it's also decreasing the orbiting frequency as well, the mass increase. And those together give the limit, which is the maximum is 1% of the rest mass energy is the maximum kinetic energy that we can get, not more, which is a rule of thumb. It depends of course slightly on how fast this is decreasing. The faster, the more focusing, so there's an interplay there. Okay, now we will stop here, because next we will look at the focusing in mathematical forms. So we will stop here and continue in the next lecture. So thank you.